Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 28th of July, recording at 9:06 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, as I usually do, a quick review of the week. This was the week in which stock markets regained more of their nerve. Good rallies and closing out the week on quite a strong note. More on that later. Government bonds mostly ranging, but got a boost here today from the US GDP figures for the second quarter. The estimate, the average estimate was that it would come in at 3%, came in at 2.5%. So there's proof positive in case anybody needed it. I think it was pretty well obvious anyway that the US economy has slowed. That will obviously influence Ben Bernanke and the rest of the Fed. Now, that helped to weaken the dollar, which had had an up day yesterday. That's been completely reversed in here. And precious metals, a mixed day here. They were down a bit, but then really recovered. And gold is up about 40 cents on the day here today, but I was talking about the week overall. They'd come down and then started to move back up again for the most part. And oil. Now, oil had pushed its head back above $75 again earlier this week and has subsequently come off. It's down to $73.20 in after-hours trading right now, and that's helped to fuel the stock market rally. Natural gas has had a good week, quite a significant gain overall, and the September contract is currently $7.24. So that is testing the previous rally high. Okay, so where are we in the cycle and what's going on overall? Well, just a quick review here. You might remember that back in June, when things were getting a bit panicky in terms of stock markets, that I put out a piece saying that I felt that we had seen the worst of the decline and that the very bearish comments that we were beginning to hear I felt were exaggerated. And I also said that value had returned quite rapidly to a number of the markets, and particularly some of the emerging markets, and I then went on and listed some of those valuations. We also well, let me stick with stay with that. Now, we saw a technical rally, which owed a lot to short covering off those June lows. And a point that I then made was, and that was quite a reasonable rally in some indices, well, recovering anything from sort of a fifth to possibly as much as half of the decline that we had seen from the May highs, taking most stock market indices into consideration. Now, thereafter, and a point I made at that time was that what we would eventually see, of course, would be a pullback to test support either near that June low or above, and that to create a bullish picture to indicate that we had seen or to support my contention that we had seen the worst of the correction, if and possibly even all of the correction, we would need to see a higher low established. Now, we have seen higher lows in early July for the majority, or early to mid-July for a majority of the stock market indices. And some of them are actually pushing or have pushed above the previous little rally high. And that then opens the door for tests of the actual May highs. And to try to summarize that, if you're able to follow that technical argument, and maybe it's a lot easier if you look at charts of any of the major indices, we have the June low, and then we have the July low, which I don't think will be broken this month, certainly not. And so we have a higher low, And we might even be seeing, well, we have already seen a higher high in some of these, but all still beneath the May high, except for some of the emerging market indices, which Owen is talking about here today, or some of the Eastern European indices, rather, which Owen is talking about here today. And there are a few more that have also gone through to new highs, things like Peru. So not global leaders here in terms of importance, but interesting to see nonetheless. Okay, so all of this evidence really is very much in line with my view overall that we are seeing, and nothing more than a medium-term correction in global stock markets. And so I'll stick with my script that the worst will be over, or that it'll all be over, I should say, that the correction will be over by the end of October, if not sooner, and that we will be in an environment where markets can rally and rally quite steadily. Now, could we have entered that rather favorable environment already? Well, on the basis of the technical evidence, that's possible, but I would be wary of that view at this stage, and partly because of seasonal factors and the general nervousness that has been around in the markets. I think we may well see some additional support building prior to a really sustainable recovery. But I'm going to give you a little technical measure of this, which I think should serve us all well. And it's important that I do this and emphasize it because I'm going on holiday on Monday, and I'm not going to be back until around the 23rd or 24th of August. I'm not quite sure, but I'll need a day or two just to go through the libraries and reports and what Owen's done, because I will be quite out of touch during this trip. I'll be reading a couple of newspapers and so on, but I'll need to reorient myself before I start making forecasts for sure, and I can do that quite quickly. But here's the test. Now, I mentioned that we had the June lows, and we also had the July lows established earlier this month. And the July lows are higher for all but the very small cap indices, such as the NASDAQ. Now, I know there's some big cap shares on there, but the NASDAQ falls into this category where we saw the actual July low being below the June lows. That also applies to the Tokyo second section. It may apply to AIM and some of those other UK small indices, but I haven't checked those recently, so forgive me for not being sure on that, but you can check it quickly enough in the library. So small caps have underperformed. People had retreated into bigger cap shares, understandably, as they took fright during the May-June correction. Okay, and here's the important point. As long as the July reaction lows hold, as long as they are not broken, in other words, then give the benefit of the doubt to sideways to higher trading. And those bears, those people who are talking about this being a bear market, they cannot be right unless first those July lows are taken out, and those are higher than the June lows for all the major indices. And secondly, and additionally, the June lows would need to be taken out. Now, anything's possible in this world, but you need a few practical handles here in terms of analysis. First one is those June lows for so many of the world's, I beg your pardon, those July lows for so many of the world's stock market indices. If those hold, as I say, we have higher lows, two higher lows, or we have a higher low, the June and the July low, and for a number of indices, we're now beginning to see a higher high as well. So that's the beginning of a gradual ranging upward trend. Now, as I say, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a fright or two between now and the end of October. So markets may come down. If markets come down and break the July low, then that ought to be treated or regarded as a flashing warning sign here. Obviously, it'll show that there's still resistance and selling pressure overhead. That would be one point for whatever reason. And it would also open the door to a possibility of a test of the June lows, which are below the July lows for the majority of major indices, everything but the small cap indices, as I've said before. And if the June lows were taken out, that could still be no more than a medium-term correction, but it would give far more technical ammunition to the bear market advocates overall. But that hasn't happened yet, and until it does happen, as I say, I would give sideways to higher ranging the benefit of the doubt because we have a higher low, July over June, and we have a higher high for a number of those indices. Now, if the next reaction, whenever that occurs, presumably in August, if the next reaction establishes a low above the July low for these indices and then rallies off that low, we would have a higher reaction low, and that would provide a little bit more positive bullish, in other words, evidence for stock markets. Okay, now what I also want to mention is that I have done a fairly extensive review of my investment interests and positions in here, and I've outlined in comment of the day. I haven't posted it yet, but I will shortly. I've been reading this fascinating report that I'm going to conclude on oil, but I've detailed really my thinking. It'll be familiar ground for certainly for veteran subscribers, but not necessarily for newer subscribers. Now, that's what I'm looking for, and that's what I'm interested in. And you may have other investment requirements, but well, I'll leave it to you. You'll be able to review all that at your leisure, and I hope you find it useful. Now let's move on to the government bonds, slower growth, and less upward pressure on short-term interest rates. Creates a benign environment for those government bonds, but they are in secular bear markets. And what concerns me overall is the supply of bonds, as I mentioned before, the long-term inflationary cycle that we're in, although I feel that a lot of people who are in denial about inflation being in the pipeline. And to them, I just say, or anybody who still holds that view, I just say, what on earth do they think is the consequence of a vast amount of monetary printing, which we've seen from the US Federal Reserve, the Bank of China, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan? I've started with four of the biggies here, and you can go on and add to that list ad infinitum. Of course, it was going to create inflationary pressures. And of which we would see the least of those inflationary pressures in manufactured goods due to globalization, the China factor, and so on, which you know all about. But with that inflation in the pipeline, with government debt in a number of countries, with governments issuing more and more bonds at a time when yields were really quite low anyway, because people were discounting a long deflation. Then only a few years ago, think how many people were talking about deflation and possible depression and so on. So yields were low, and then, as I've already mentioned, you have all that supply of bonds, you had all that money printing that was taking place, which creates a long-term inflationary cycle, and a long-term inflationary cycle starts very slowly, but gradually gathers pace in sort of an erratic rising trend over the years. And then we have the issuance by governments of these 40 and 50 year bonds. And as I've said before on many occasions, but so many new subscribers coming in, a point worth repeating, Does anybody in their right mind think that governments would be issuing 40 or 50 year long-dated government bonds if they felt that long-term interest rates were going to go lower? Of course they wouldn't. They'd be issuing short-term debt. They're only going to issue those 40 and 50 year bonds if they know how much inflation is being created and that they will go on creating, and they know that those long-term yields can only rise. So lock in that long borrowing right now, where you can still do it cheaply. Well, if they need to borrow so much and are going to be issuing 40 and 50 year bonds, well, I don't want to be buying, that's for sure. I only want to short those bonds after we see good technical rallies and those technical rallies fade. Okay. Now let's go on to the consequences of those inflationary pressures here. And I mentioned that I was reading a fascinating energy report. It's by it's an actually it's an interview that was taking place in before a committee in Australia. And it's a government committee item. I'll be posting it so you'll see the whole thing. And it was by an Iranian former oil state executive. Did I say oil state? I said state oil company executive. Correct that. Samson Bakhtiari, I think, is his name. I probably mispronounced that surname. Those of you who are fascinated by the subject of oil, and particularly the topic of peak oil, will have seen his name from time to time. But this is a phenomenal interview sequence with these Australian politicians. Some 49 pages of that, although a few of those are bumps. But it's very condensed. It's very, very interesting, and I think it's extremely important if you read anything that I've posted over the last few days. Please read this report. I do think that it is quite important. And the gist of it is, though, that he thinks that oil prices is going to are going to go much, much higher. And he's talking about we're not talking about $80 to $100 a barrel. We're talking about $200 and eventually even $300 a barrel for oil, looking a number of years down the road, say 10, 15 years down the road. Now, you know, I believe in the commodity super cycle, and I've given all those supply-demand arguments. I'm not going to repeat them here, or this would be the longest broadcast I've ever made, and I try to avoid that. But how are governments going to, let's just assume first, that this forecast is remotely right. Now, people don't like to think of the oil price going up a lot because it's a frightening script. We'd all be much happier, I'm sure, if the oil price went down to $40 a barrel and lower. Okay, we'd lose some money on our oil and other energy investments, but we'd make that up and or make that back and more in other investments. So people don't want to think of this happening, but there is some pretty interesting evidence suggesting that it may well happen. But I give us but how can we be sure? Because we get some reassuring statements from international oil organizations and from big oil, which may well be influenced by its contracts. But here's how we can tell. And we go to the price chart. Now, this is not a chart reading exercise, which always has a bit of subjectivity to it. This is a matter of what price level remains in the market. In other words, if Samson Bakhtiari is correct, and if Holbert is correct, and the other people who've been saying that oil is going to go a lot higher, and it's certainly the Fuller Money view, that oil over the next many years will go a great deal higher. Now, if we're correct, then you're not going to see oil coming back down to $50 and lower. Now, when I let me put that in a slightly more important context, if the bears in terms of the oil price are right, if those who say that it's just a cyclical move and that the price is going to come down, and then basically stay flat. If so, this is a cyclical rather than secular trend. If they're right, then the technical evidence would be that the price would come down to $50 a barrel or lower, and it would stay there and stay there, say, for a year or more. And I think that would leave the rest of us feeling, certainly I would be feeling, a bit chagrined, a bit embarrassed, and say, well, I had a flap over that, but the price action on the charts is what really does rule, and it has come down, and it looks like it's going to stay down. Now, conversely, if the people who say the oil price is going to go much higher, and I'm in that group, if we're right, then of course, it won't be coming down to $50 a barrel and staying there. You'll see it continuing to hover in these 60s, 70s region, and then and moving higher from here. Because if the oil, if we have reached peak oil on conventional oil, and if the synthetics are so difficult to produce and so costly to produce, and if the tar sands and the oil shale are really going to be a very, very expensive way of producing oil, increasingly so. And increasingly so, people may think, well, wait, technology's improving all along, so how could it be increasingly more expensive? Well, yes, technology is improving, but as with conventional oil, the people who are producing the tar sands and thinking about producing the oil shale will go to where the richest deposits are, and they'll use that first, and then they move on to what's a little less easy to reach and a little bit more expensive to produce. And the point that Bakhtiari is making is that the costs in terms of oil, pollution, heating up the tar sands and the shale, when you hear that with the vast shale oil reserves that the United States has, that's in rock basically, and the even bigger shale oil reserves that China has, I think some 2 billion, I won't quote the figure, but vast reserves. But the figure that he cites is that it takes about 2,000 tons of shale rock to produce one barrel of oil. 2,000 tons of shale rock to produce one barrel of oil. Well, just imagine what that does to the countryside if you're trying to process that. Just imagine what an expensive earth-moving, crushing, heating operation that would actually be. So the price of that is phenomenally expensive. So yes, we have a lot of unconventional oil on the globe, but it's not going to be all that easy to tap. Now let me get back to the inflation side here, but except for the obvious point that I want to hold on to my Timothy Guinness funds in his global energy funds. What are governments going to do with this? They won't be able to drive the price of oil back down. They'll have to pay for it. They'll inflate. That's a natural link here. And then with a lot of these other industrial resources, which are certainly influenced in part by the price of oil, but also by the vast transformation that's taking place in the developing world, as with the help of globalization and having embraced capitalism, all these countries are now seeing this very rapid growth in their economies, China, India, etc. The demand that they're exerting on resources price, again, this is inflationary. What are governments going to do? Where they will print more money. So again, if you can't afford the oil, your people can't afford the oil, print more money. And of course the oil producers will realize that this is going on, and so they'll have an interest in seeing the price of oil move even higher. So they may be going flat out to produce, or maybe not, but they won't be trying to get the price of oil back down again just because governments are printing more money. And if governments are printing more money to pay for this, then the purchasing power of that currency is declining. So what will they do? They will invest this in either in other tangibles, whether it's more oil facilities that they may have access to, whether it's building cities, whether it's gold. They will invest that property, they will invest it into real assets. That's the type of medium to longer term future that that I envisage. Now, it's not a new idea. It's something that I've been talking about really pretty much since 2002, 2003, for sure, onwards. Okay, so that's a very that's an environment in which I think the U.S. with its deficit problems will have a bigger vested interest in most in getting its currency down. That will push the dollar price of gold up even higher. I maintain that these precious metals are all in secular bull markets. They're currently experiencing a medium-term correction. I maintain that all of the industrial metals are in secular bull markets. Most of them are currently experiencing a medium-term correction, but they're not getting the collapse, and they're not the bubble that a number of people have been saying. So my investment portfolio is going to remain way overweight in industrial resources, and the other big area is mostly in emerging markets, and then most of those in Asia. But again, I've written about all that today, and you will be able to read that. So that's another long-term broadcast. I'm off on my holiday, so just thank you very much for your interest and the wonderful support that you've given me during my pre and post-operative period here in this convalescence. I will come back hopefully rested, more rested, and a little bit fitter, or ready to start getting fit once again, more likely to be the case. But I have been very moved by the sentiments that you have expressed, and thank you very much, and wish you all the best in the world, including a splendid August, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.